97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
Hey, it's Bo Matthews.
I'm on location, and I'm at the Antonia Firehouse, number two. We're on the firehouse number two on M Highway, and I have with me the fire chief, Matt Crutch, and I also have a dear friend for many years. We have Christy Plunkard. She is kind of new to the department, less than a year, right?
Correct.
Okay, and you reached out because you guys are promoting for this community an open house. So I wanted to just be in person with you to talk about this because, you know, Second Amendment of the Great Outdoors, it's like, why would we promote this? Well, people go outdoors. They get hurt outdoors. There's issues that you have to deal with. You have to babysit all of us crazy civilians, and we thank you for doing that every day. But tell me what people can expect on April 27th when you do this.
Okay, we will have two food trucks. We're going to have Bob's Dine-In, and we'll also have Kona Ice.
Okay.
We are also going to have two helicopters make appearances. One will be the city police helicopter, and the other one's going to be Cardinal Glennon Children's Hospital.
Wonderful.
So you can see the inside of a police helicopter, and you can also see the inside of a medic helicopter.
Do you have to be like a kid size to go and see this stuff, or can adults come?
No, adults can.
Okay, good. I'll be here. No, that's cool.
Yeah. One of our battalion chiefs also does CPR, so he'll be there with a demo. The Jefferson County Backstoppers will have a table out here. The Jeffco Sheriffs will be making an appearance. Jeffco 911.
Wow.
We have Allstate of Barnhart's going to have a tent out here. Woodard, they're going to be out here.
Is that the restoration company?
Restoration company. And then we're waiting to get confirmation on several other.
Okay. But this is good, though. And you do this usually once a year, right?
Yes.
And about what kind of response do you get, and how do people know about it other than hearing about it on the radio like they're doing right now?
So we get a very good response. We actually have a competition. We have a little safety house that we throw water. It's a bucket brigade.
Okay.
So like a house roof is on fire. We have some local schools come, and it's a competition between the schools.
Nice.
That we do. So that draws in a pretty good crowd there. Most of the time, we end up doing Facebook posts. We're getting something in the leader.
Okay.
And that's just word of mouth.
Does anybody need to RSVP for this, or can they literally just show up?
You just show up.
Okay. And, I mean, you guys have a pretty good lot here, but, I mean, do you overload? I mean, where do you park everybody?
We do overload. The water district is on Moss Hollow. They let us use their parking lot sometimes. The subdivision cars park over right next door to us in the subdivision.
Gotcha.
We have some lot, little small lot for right across the firehouse station, and then we will have handicap parking in our parking lot for the handicap.
Well, I will tell you that anybody that's not a first responder, on behalf of them, I thank you for what you do because it frightens the crap out of me. Seriously, Christy, your law enforcement background, I don't know how you did it, but a great career you had.
Thank you.
Glad you're safe and out of it and helping these guys.
Me too.
Matt, how long have you been fire chief?
I've been fire chief for 3 years now. I've been with the department for 21.
Wow. Were you born and raised here?
Yes.
In Jeffco?
Jefferson County off Sekman Road.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so your family's so proud.
Yes,
being the fire chief. So what TV shows that relate to what you do for a living do you watch?
I watch Chicago Fire. Ooh. And pretty much any fire show that I watch.
Fire Country?
Fire Country, I've started watching.
Oh, okay.
I've only been a couple episodes on that.
Come on, so. Bodie, you can do it. Anybody that's seen the show knows what I'm talking about. But it's just silly because, like I said, we don't. I mean, back in the day, and I'm an old guy, but back in the day, Emergency, you know, all these old shows is just sometimes the only peek that we get. The next time we see you guys is probably on our worst day when there's a fire or an emergency. So really, thank you very much for what you guys do. But this event is really about family fun, getting out, getting to see the firefighters up close. They are heroes, but they're people too. And
yes.
Your crews, like right now, I know that Rock Township is doing the 48 on, 96 off. Is that right?
Yes.
Do you guys do that too?
We do the same thing, yes.
How's the crew with that?
They love it.
Do they?
So, yes.
A lot of them have other businesses and stuff.
Oh, yes. So a lot of the fire guys work part-time with that, so that kind of helps put some of the income. So
yeah.
And
just doing and keeps them busy.
That's really cool. Yes. Well, again, on behalf of us silly, stupid civilians, we thank you for what you do, babysitting us. Fire Chief Matt Crutch and Christy Plunkard, thank you so much. And if anybody wants more information, where can we send them about your open house?
Follow us on Facebook, and we're getting Instagram and X. I guess it's called now.
You know what? You're the first person to really start out that way. You're getting there closer. Are you still accepting, like, if vendors want to be part of it?
Yes.
Can they still reach out to you?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Absolutely. We'd love to have the more the merrier.
Good deal. All right. All ages, whole families, bring them out Saturday, April 27th from 11 to 2. Thank you, guys. Be safe. And thanks for being on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Bo. Coming up next here on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors, what do you know about keeping yourself and your family safe in the event of a real emergency? Brian Chappell is going to join us and give us some insight. Coming up, we'll be right back.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. My name is Bo Matthews. Thanks for listening. We got Mark Cox, Carl Middleman. We like to call Mark Big Fish. That's his childhood nickname, and there's reasons behind that. We got Carl, the intern. Carl, the intern. He's the executive producer for Crying Out Loud. This segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory. They are your number one stop for suppressing a firearm. And they've got a great selection of weapons of war on the wall. It's really a great store if you've never been. I actually had a rifle repaired there recently, which was outstanding, a great experience. But check them out at RazorbackArmory.com or find them on Manchester Road next to the tennis shop and tell them Bo sent you in.
Sounds good. You know, that music you heard there leading in, as Carl brings it back up, is Divine Sorrow, a local band. Very well known to many of us, and my friend Brian Chappell is on the phone with us this morning. He happens to be the bass player and the lead singer and sometimes the roadie and the cook. I mean, he does it all. That's not all. Brian, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you gentlemen this morning?
We are doing just fine, buddy. Had a great time with you the other night. Aaron Hagar was in town, Sammy's son, and made an appearance out at the Funny Bone in St. Charles. Divine Sorrow got to warm up the crowd and then play some Montrose and some old Sammy Hagar heavy metal, and they had great time. And Aaron Hagar sounds just like his dad, doesn't he, Brian?
He's, you know, on top of that, he does sound like his dad. But on top of that, he is such an incredibly good human being.
Yeah.
Nothing, you know, I've been in this business a while. I've met hundreds and hundreds of rock stars, and I'm going to tell you, there's only been a few I didn't like, but for the most part, they're pretty good. But I'm going to tell you, Aaron is an exceptional human being.
He really was.
Sounds just like his dad, huh?
He is amazing. I'll play it for you, Bo, when I see you tonight. But it's amazing how much he sounded like him on a couple of those songs, like Bad Motor Scooter. I mean, I'm just closing my eyes and I'm hearing Sammy Hagar from 25 years ago. I mean, it sounded just like him. He was very down to earth. Well, I went to the meet and greet, and he just hanging out, standing around like everybody else puts their pants on just like he does. I mean, he's just really that kind of guy.
Dude, I've got to get a new phone because my phone did not ring with the invitation to join you for this night. What? Honey, I need a new phone.
I'll put you on the Divine Sorrow guest list next time.
Exactly. Okay. I was sort of on the Divine Sorrow guest list, so I appreciate that.
He's found his way in on the edge.
So Bo is introducing everybody here by their nickname, and I guess, Brian, your nickname is Chappie. That's what you people call you?
That's been my name my whole life, playing hockey, all my buddies. You know, everybody just calls me Chappie. I'm either Happy Chappie or super unhappy Chappie.
Yeah. Oh, no. Chappie, so we're all good about nicknames here. Yep.
You don't want to meet unhappy Chappie, I'm guessing.
I'm bigger than I look.
So the reason that we invited Brian on today, the reason I invited him on, is that I'm having a conversation with him one day. Just, you know, we're listening to music and we're having this conversation, and he brings up to me that one of his passions is teaching people how to truly be prepared in the event that things go sideways. I'm not talking about, you know, maybe it just a civil unrest or something, but somebody kicks in your door in the middle of the night. How prepared are you to deal with that situation? So, Brian, kind of set up for people how you arrived at the point where you are today, where you're ready to you help your friends and people understand what that risk is.
I'm a true patriot to this country. I've been watching for literally the last two decades, just kind of seeing so many things change in our environment around us, and a lot of unrest and a lot of uncertainty with even between our own citizens. And, you know, any time in history, if you studied it, you realize that the chances for unrest or things going wrong in this kind of situation are possible. You don't want to be a tinfoil hat, but you also want to err on the side of protecting the people you love and the people you care about the most. So, you know, there's a system that I've kind of put in place for my family and for people around me that I feel is a little different than, hey, let's get 100 bottles of water and throw some food in the pantry and I'll get my dad's baseball bat and we'll, you know, we'll see what happens. And I think people miss kind of the main idea of what firearms are and the responsibility that comes along with them. You know, if something goes wrong, you're not going to be Rambo. You're not going to be out in the world suddenly and you're fighting off, you know, Red China from your front door. It's going to be a very different situation than that. So there's just a few things in order, like in our family, and I know we have limited time, so I could put those in kind of an order for you, that I found that I feel, and if you practice them and have those uncomfortable conversations once in a while with the people you care about, you can be prepared. So, you know, if you want, I'll go ahead and I'll just give you a few of those things up front. Or
yeah,
if you guys
I mean,
have something
no,
you want to ask me.
I think that's so great. I you know, I've often thought in my head that I am Rambo, and I watched Wolverines repeatedly. And I think I'm prepared, but my guess is you're going to surprise me with a few of these.
Well, I think there's some simple things that people really overlook. So I have six things that I feel are pretty important to be responsible to your family and the people that you love. The first thing I always tell people is you need to have a travel and communication plan in place with your family and important other people that are connections to you. By that, I mean you set a predefined plan for worst-case scenarios. You know, depending on level of severity, those kind of things would include meeting places with limits and time limits for them to meet you at certain places so you can gather and get to wherever you're planning on being safe together. This is a pretty simple thing, you know, but you have to make sure that you set very clear definitions of the severity of each type of situation that might happen. You know, having the discussion with this with the people you care about may seem a little over the top. It may seem silly or paranoid, but it could save people's lives. And you have to keep that in mind when you're putting together your plan. Early in an emergency situation, you know, you have to have a discussion even set up and plan to talk with your children. I mean, imagine children in this situation. This is a very confusing and disruptive time for them. You need to know how to explain to them how important it is following exact directions, respecting the people that are in your circle. And, you know, you've got to teach them that the world's a little crazy sometimes. You don't want to scare them and ruin their childhood with these kind of thoughts. But it's important that you have them prepared to understand they have to follow directions. And the most important part of this first step is that you stick to the plan. If everyone says, okay, phones are out, sirens have gone off, we're going to meet at so-and-so's place. Because at the beginning of an emergency, you have some time. Stick to your plan, okay?
Well, yeah, and Chappie, I want to mention that just a couple of months ago, we had a huge cell phone outage in this country, and I don't know if it affected you personally, but it freaked me out that morning. And it almost felt like a dry run. I don't even know what the what issue it was. But CB radios, I know so many people that have a CB radio, and that goes way back 30 years when it was popular for civilians. But we rely on these boxes so much, and they are just so fragile.
Well, it had to be so disheartening that 99% of the people just went to Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like there's no survival instinct left in some of these folks, and it's sad. So, which leads me to the next thing, and you just brought that up, which is to have an emergency communication set up. You know, don't expect your cell phones are going to be reliable. They may not be working at all. You may not have electricity. And remember, those devices also have a system for tracking your location. So you have to make definitive decisions based on your level of safety and severity early in a situation. And they could be great in the immediate in ascertaining the location of the people that you need to be in touch with. However, remember, they can be used by anyone that has access to the pings on cell towers to locate you. You know, it's your friend and it's your enemy at the same time. So my suggestion is, you know, go to Costco, go somewhere. They have two-way hand radios, you know, that are good for a certain amount of range. Standard small radios. People have forgotten about these small radios that run on batteries. You know, find a trusted source. Find a trusted station on FM or AM that you know is good in an emergency. You need to know what's going on around you. So establish an emergency communication setup. It's super important in this situation. You know, and that leads me to the third thing, which is don't panic. You know, irrational decisions that are driven by your fear and confusion can lead you to some pretty unfavorable environments.
Sure.
Just try to remember your home is your castle. Nobody knows your home like you do. And most state laws, even if it's a temporary thing, will protect you in your actions when you defend your home and your family. So if you're at your home, you really have your high ground there. That's where your food is. It's where your water is. It's your home court advantage. You know everything about your home. You know everything about your neighborhood. And generally, you know a lot about the people that reside next door. You know, so you know if those people are trustable or not trustable. You know, you have to think every decision through and initiate time to run different scenarios through your head way ahead of time and think about, how do I get out of my house in this situation if I have to, if there's an emergency? Do I have an emergency? Do I have something in plan with my neighbor next door that somebody's heading at my house? I mean, can I get to their house? You know, those are just things. And refer to rule number one, having that plan is your best defense. And, you know, don't go looking for problems. You aren't Rambo. Save your attention for the people in your plan. Focus on their safety and comfort. That's a super important thing to remember. And then I go to my fourth thing, is about firearms. Be prepared to defend yourself. You know, owning a firearm isn't a means to an end. Here's questions. You know, have you trained with it? Do you have sufficient supplies for each firearm or rifle? Is it zeroed in? Do you have even a small amount of hearing protection? I don't think most people realize when you fire a firearm in an emergency situation, it's loud. You're going to lose your hearing. Yeah. You're going to be ringing. You won't hear for days.
Going to startle you.
And they've been watching too much Bruce Willis and Sylvester Stallone, you know, where they're just running through buildings firing off 45s all day. You'd be deaf. You won't be able to hear someone talking 3 feet from you. So, I mean, do you have some just simple earplugs, like the little foam plug-ins? Put them in your ear, you know? Do you have those accessible to you? You know, that's super-duper important. You know, you need to train with that firearm. You need to be able to hit. And my general rule of thumb when I teach concealed carry or when I'm teaching people safety is a simple piece of print paper, an 8x10 sheet of paper, put it at 5 yards, you know, put it at 7 yards, put it at 15 yards, put it at 21 yards. You don't need to play the game of what's in a bullseye. That is the same size as the torso of the average human being, which is the area that you would be taught to hit.
Right.
To take away a threat. Hit the paper. And I would tell you, 9 out of 10 people that I meet that I'm trying to train, they can't do that consistently. And that means you could hurt somebody close by or on the other side of them or, you know, the wrong people. You end up hurting the people you care about. So training is super duper important. And which leads into the very next thing, which is like, are you setting good everyday habits that promote a strong and healthy lifestyle? In an emergency, you don't have to be an Olympic athlete, but you do need to be able to walk for several miles.
Right.
You do need to be able to take a quick jog if you have to. You got to be strong enough to help pick up a kid and run with them or do what you've got to do or keep them someplace. Or, you know, there's enormous amounts of things. So just every day, if you try to take care of yourself, it could be a simple walk around your neighborhood. You know, just walk. Get out every couple of days and walk. But while you're walking, look for places. Are there places that I could tuck into over there if something happened right here on the street? Is there, you know where things are. Know where the little stores are that have supplies in your neighborhood. Because Schnucks, Deerbergs, if something goes wrong, those places are going to be inundated with everybody. Oh, yeah. And they're going to run out.
Yeah, look what happened during COVID. I mean, you couldn't find toilet paper. Foodstuffs was gone. It was just insane.
Exactly. I mean, it's good to stockpile things for yourself. And look, that's a part of preparing yourself for the worst. But you're going to run out of the supplies. So you really need to find some place that is off the beaten path that is going to have some of those supplies, some of those things, and develop relationships with those small places, you know? So you have that plan in your wheelhouse. And if you do those kind of things, you're going to get through. I mean, the hard part is most people, even if they're stocked up pretty well at home, they might have 2 weeks worth of stuff to survive on. Maybe.
Well, it's good advice.
You can only hope that things are better.
I hope people take it, Brian. And even as we're talking, Bo Matthews is putting camouflage on his face and his cheeks, and he's going to get the bandolier out in a few minutes and go in the backyard and start training.
Well, laugh, buddy. Laugh all you want.
No buckshot. And again, and I won't take up too much time. Just the most important thing that I found that I carry with me every day, and it may seem a little crazy, I have a 3-day bag with me all the time, a backpack.
Yeah.
And that backpack has basically 72 hours worth of protection, basic supplies, emergency sleeping and weather protection items, fire starters, a life straw for water purification. I could drink out of a creek through the life straw, and it's going to give me fresh water that I can drink and isn't going to make me sick. Self-defense items, even a small pocket knife, anything like that. And something for communications and a flashlight. You know, those things are important. You have to have something with you. Let's say, worst case scenario, let's say the big boogeyman is the EMP.
Yes.
You know, you realize that if something like that happened, like your vehicles, if they're built after like 1986, they might shut off and you won't be able to start them. I mean, it's going to wipe them out and you're just going to have to get home. So you need to be prepared to somehow get home within 72 hours, and that bag will get you there. If you've trained yourself to, you know, take a night and sleep out in your backyard for a change. I know it's weird, but what if that happened to you in your real life? Would you be able, I would tell you, most people wouldn't be able to sit outside and sleep at night on a fall night because they get hypothermia.
Yeah.
They make little tiny bags, Mylar blankets, that literally are the size of a deck of cards that you can put into your bag that when you put yourself inside can keep you alive through a situation like that. And,
that's right.
You know, and your body is going to be going through enormous stress. So you have to have at least 2 liters of fresh water a day or any kind of water that's not going to make you sick. And you really need a minimum of 1,200 calories. So a lot of companies make pre-sealed packaged foods. They're high caloric intake with certain amount of carbs, things like that, that you just eat. It looks like the size of a small brownie, but it has 400 calories, and you can eat 3 of those a day. You know, it's to get you home. The main thing is are you prepared for all of that? Because if you're not healthy and you're hungry, you're going to make bad decisions.
Brian, I know you do the CCW training and all. Are you offering this training for individuals?
I will teach people if they want to learn. And I have offered this before, and I've taught a lot of people. Some people are just, they can't get past the thought of the world being this idyllic place that everything is going to be okay all the time. I'm not training people to be paranoid. I'm saying, look, what do you have to lose by being ready, just in case? I mean, do you love your kids? Do you love your mom? What about your 80-year-old mom sitting at her house? She's not going to be okay by herself.
Nope.
You know, do you love all those people around you enough? And again, Mark, you've known me for a while. My message from my stage is love and caring about people and helping people. And yes, I do that. I do it on a pretty personal level with people. You know, I don't mind helping other people. And I think just getting past the stigma of, hey, you know, you've lost your mind, that I think that's a hard thing for people to get.
Yeah, that's
people
true.
That go
that's
out
true.
Rambo style and have a camouflage truck and they're going bananas and they carry their carry gun with a big laser on it and a red dot, and it looks like something out of, you know, RoboCop. That's kind of ridiculous, Carrie.
No, and let's just be honest. I mean, we've had some, we've had the cell phone outage I mentioned. You know, we've also had warnings of earthquakes, the New Madrid fault, all that stuff. Just look at the flood of New Year's, 2016 it was. It was all I could do to get home and into Jeff County because I was on the South County side. And I mean, I was scrambling. I'm thinking I got to drive all the way to Memphis to cross the river. So
you know,
having water for sure.
And I'm down in Oakville, so I'm down south, you know, and for us getting across, we have relatives that live across the river in Columbia. You know, you lose that bridge, the JB Bridge, you lose any of our systems of bridges, like they're finding out in Delaware, you know, you have a transportation problem, and you don't have a way to get to your people. So well, Brian, I'm just saying, let's err on the side of caution.
Absolutely. Good advice, my friend. We appreciate you sharing some of that with us this morning.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me on. If you ever guys want to break down some stuff, I'm more than happy to join you anytime you'd like me.
Sounds good. We'll get you out. We'll go out in the woods someday and practice. How about that?
Hey, we will. I'd be more than happy to take you boys out for a little range time.
Brian Chappelle, thanks for your time. We'll be listening and watching for Divine Sorrow's next gig, too.
It's coming up, buddy.
All right. We'll talk soon.
See you soon, guys.
You bet. Brian Chappelle there, lead singer and bass player for Divine Sorrow and all around a good guy. Telling you that.
That's great.
You bet.
I took notes, by the way.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, it should.
I did. Okay. So coming up on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors, we are going to talk to Tim Chelsvik of Drury Outdoors about turkey season. I will tell you, he texted me a couple of weeks ago, said, hey, can I hunt a turkey on your property?
Ooh.
Like, all the turkeys on my property are in my freezer. So, no.
Too late.
That's next on Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors.
Radio in the Great Outdoors. Bad Motor Scooter there. Good selection, Carl Middleman.
My pleasure, Mark.
Well done. You should have heard his son play that the other day. It was outstanding. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I've got a new phone on order already. Since my invite didn't come through.
Oh, yeah, you missed that out. I'll make sure you hear about that next time. We'll get you on the Divine Sorrow inside list. For sure. That was a good time. Anyway, we are wanted to switch to the outdoors now as in terms of hunting, because I got a lot of friends. I have to tell you, I had a lot of friends on Facebook who have been turkey hunting and have been successful. I did not even attempt it this year because I'm not a seasoned turkey hunter, but Tim Chelsvik is from Drury Outdoors, and he's with us again to talk a little bit more about that. Tim, how are you?
I'm sad.
You're sad because Bo Matthews turned you down to hunt on his property, or what?
It's a story of my life. Bo's always turning me down. But I was actually out sitting this morning for turkeys, called in a big old beautiful Missouri gobbler. He was spitting and drumming and strutting the whole way in. And like an idiot, I'm trying to hunt them with my bow and arrow. Whereas honest, God-fearing individuals hunt them the proper way with a shotgun. I'm an idiot, and I keep trying to kill them with a bow. And I hit them, and I hit them good, but I hunt on small suburban parcels, and he ran off onto the neighbor's side, and I was not able to recover him. So
did he take the arrow with him?
He did not. No, it was a full pass through. I got the arrow back and everything. And a real bummer. But my daughter did kill during youth season. She killed on that opening Saturday. So so we are enjoying some turkey nuggets this spring.
With a shotgun or a bow and arrow?
With a shotgun. Yeah. You know, she'd actually tried killing a turkey for years with a crossbow, just because she was a little sketched out by the recoil from a shotgun.
Right.
And even that, she hit one bird and it ran off and died somewhere. We had to get a salvage tag for that bird when we finally recovered it after the coyotes had their way with it. And then the second bird I called in for her last year, came in from 200 yards. Like, we watched it fly down from the roost. It was just beautiful, beautiful morning. Watched him the whole way through the pasture, work into the decoys. And when she went to shoot, the crossbow bolt glanced off the support beam for the blind.
Oh, no.
And so the arrow from the crossbow just kind of went flying out in the pasture. The turkey decided he'd had enough and started running away. And I thankfully had the Winchester shotgun there, and I dropped him as he was running away. So I told Sophie that was her assist. I tagged the bird because I technically killed it. But she actually killed her very first bird this year with a 410. We had some friends that invited us up to their family farm near Kirksville, Missouri, and just had a blast. Beautiful footage. It's on DeerCast. It's on YouTube now on the Drury Outdoors channel. So she's super happy. And frankly, if that's the only thing that happened this turkey season, I'm satisfied just to see her have success. And my youngest son Bo was with us there in the blind, and he got to witness the whole thing go down and was patient. And so it was just a great experience and a great introduction to the tradition of turkey hunting, because it's kind of a lifestyle, and it's one of those things that is, it's like floats in Missouri, you know, it's just quintessential Missouri.
And I'm not a turkey hunter. I think I've been twice in my life. I've never killed one. I am surprised to hear, though, that a bird could have an arrow, that they're sturdy enough that a turkey could have an arrow pass through its body and still be able to run away from you.
Literally tough old birds.
I guess they are. They're like me and Bo. They're tough old birds, right, Bo?
Yeah, and remind folks, how old are your kids, Tim?
So Sophie is 12 and Bo is 7.
There you go. That's the way to do it.
And Sophie's been turkey hunting now for probably 4 years. And I've told her, I was like, baby, you are a turkey hunter. Now you're a turkey killer.
Because
she's put up with all the, you know, the early mornings and the cold sits of youth season. And she's been really committed to it. And I think there's something to be said about the struggle. You know, the kids go out, they don't have success on the first time. It's probably better for them that they experience that, because that helps them appreciate the success more and helps them build that capacity that really any outdoorsman or woman needs in terms of patience.
Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Bad Motor Scooter there. Good selection, Carl Middleman.
My pleasure, Mark.
Well done. You should have heard his son play that the other day. It was outstanding. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I've got a new phone on order already. Since my invite didn't come through.
Oh, yeah, you missed that out. I'll make sure you hear about that next time. We'll get you on the Divine Sorrow inside list. For sure. That was a good time. Anyway, wanted to switch you to the outdoors now in terms of hunting, because I got a lot of friends. I have to tell you, I had a lot of friends on Facebook who have been turkey hunting and have been successful. I did not even attempt it this year because I'm not a seasoned turkey hunter, but Tim Chelsvik is from Drury Outdoors, and he's with us again to talk a little bit more about that. Tim, how are you?
I'm sad.
You're sad because Bo Matthews turned you down to hunt on his property, or what?
It's a story of my life. Bo's always turning me down. But I was actually out sitting this morning for turkeys, called in a big old beautiful Missouri gobbler. He was spitting and drumming and strutting the whole way in. And like an idiot, I'm trying to hunt them with my bow and arrow. Oh. Whereas honest, God-fearing individuals hunt them the proper way with a shotgun. I'm an idiot, and I keep trying to kill them with a bow. And I hit him, and I hit him good, but I hunt on small suburban parcels, and he ran off onto the neighbor's side, and I was not able to recover him. So
Did he take the arrow with him?
He did not. No, it was a full pass through. I got the arrow back and and everything. And yeah, a real bummer. But my daughter did kill during youth season. She killed on that opening Saturday. So so we are enjoying some turkey nuggets this spring.
With a shotgun or a bow and arrow?
With a shotgun, yeah. You know, she'd actually tried killing a turkey for years with a crossbow just because she was a little sketched out by the recoil from a shotgun.
Right.
And even that, she hit one bird and it ran off and died somewhere. We had to get a salvage tag for that bird when we finally recovered it after the coyotes had their way with it. And then the second bird I called in for her last year came in from 200 yards. Like, we watched it fly down from the roost. It was just beautiful, beautiful morning. Watched him the whole way through the pasture, work into the decoys. And when she went to shoot, the crossbow bolt glanced off the support beam for the blind.
Oh, no.
And so the arrow from the crossbow just kind of went flying out in the pasture. The turkey decided he'd had enough and started running away. And I thankfully had the Winchester shotgun there, and I dropped him as he was running away. So I told Sophie that was her assist. I tagged the bird because I technically killed it. But she actually killed her very first bird this year with a 410. We had some friends that invited us up to their family farm near Kirksville, Missouri, and just had a blast. Beautiful footage. It's on DeerCast. It's on YouTube now on the Drury Outdoors channel. So she's super happy. And frankly, if that's the only thing that happens this turkey season, I'm satisfied just to see her have success. And my youngest son, Bo, was with us there in the blind, and he got to witness the whole thing go down and was patient. And so it was just a great experience and a great introduction to the tradition of turkey hunting, because it's kind of a lifestyle, and it's one of those things that is, it's like floats in Missouri, you know, it's just quintessential Missouri.
And I'm not a turkey hunter. I think I've been twice in my life. I've never killed one. I am surprised to hear, though, that a bird could have an arrow, that they're sturdy enough that a turkey could have an arrow pass through its body and still be able to run away from you.
Literally tough old birds.
I guess they are. They're like me and Bo. They're tough old birds, right, Bo?
Yeah. and remind folks, how old are your kids, Tim?
So Sophie is 12 and Bo is 7.
There you go. That's the way to do it.
So and Sophie's been turkey hunting now for probably 4 years, and I've told her, I was like, baby, you are a turkey hunter. Now you're a turkey killer.
Yes.
'Cause she's put up with all the, you know, the early mornings and the cold sits of youth season, and she's been really committed to it. And I think there's something to be said about the struggle. You know, the kids go out, they don't have success on the first time. It's probably better for them that they experience that, because that helps them appreciate the success more and helps them build that capacity and really any outdoorsman or woman needs in terms of patience and grit and determination.
Yeah, I love that. I probably have more pictures of my son asleep with his head on my shoulder in a deer blind, a deer stand, than I do of him with a deer. I mean, you're right. It builds character. They have to learn patience and persevering, and then eventually pays off, right?
And you become buddies with your kids.
Yes.
Like when they're in the outdoors, you give them real tasks that have real significance. My kids aren't completely tech avoidant. They play games and stuff. And my son was like, I just won $200,000 on Monopoly Go. I was like, not really. Yeah, that's not real money. But when you go out in the turkey, like, he can help set up the decoys, and he can help put his hearing protection on. And like, there are things that he can do that are real and have real consequences, good and bad, that really help a young person understand the realities of life. And I know, Bo, you and I talked about that article I wrote for DeerCast a few months back. I think it was titled something about how hunting defeats woke culture, because hunting is one of those things that just
there are very few things that are as real as hunting. Something could potentially die. You could potentially have some kind of failure. Like, I had a failure this morning. There's no undo button, or there's no back button on that. There's no
restart.
Yeah.
Or you get new lives. Yeah, and you got lit up for that article, probably just because of the title, but I just had this conversation with a buddy of mine over the weekend, last weekend, and it's like, you think of all of the kids that are growing up in apartment complexes, and I was one of them, but I also got out of the house, but so many kids are spending hours and hours and hours on surfaces and screens and whatever that they just don't understand. And so I feel blessed that my granddaughters down in Texas are deer hunting, and they're hog hunting, and they're outdoors. They're learning how to garden. They're doing all these things. So my question to you, Tim, is if somebody's listening that's never heard the show before and thinking, man, I wish my dad would have, taken me out turkey hunting. How does
Are you guys recording this conversation?
Oh, yeah. We are, yeah. Indeed.
Oh. We are the government.
Oh. No, I really don't believe you. Sorry, Bo. I rudely interrupted.
No. So my point is if somebody is listening to the show for the first time going, I wish I would have been raised as a hunter. How do I get into it at an adult age? Or maybe you're a young person. You're like, I want to get into this. How do I do this?
One of the best things, like probably the biggest obstacle to getting into hunting, is land access. And Missouri has a pretty robust system for gaining access to public ground. I mean, there's lots of conservation areas that allow public hunting during seasons with no special additional permits. But then they also have managed hunts that get you access to, like, the county park system around St. Louis, or different conservation areas that maybe don't have hunting allowed during seasons, except for these special managed hunt periods. And there's a lottery. Like, you sign up. I think the deer hunting one is open the month of June or July, one or the other. But there's some really great hunting on public ground in Missouri. So first off, getting access to land is great. And then just consuming media, whether that's from Drury Outdoors or the Hunting Public or whatever. And you start to figure out, like, the kind of equipment that you need. And there are a lot of people that hunt that are dying to take someone with them, or that have extra gear or stuff that they upgraded, and they still have their old things, like an old bow or an old crossbow or camouflage, whatever. And they're happy to let you borrow or take you with them. And even if you want a firearms hunt, you don't have to go through the full hunter safety course. If you're over 16 and want to hunt, you can get an apprentice hunting permit for, I think, 1 or 2 years, as long as you're hunting with someone else that that does have a valid hunting license and has gone through a hunter safety course. So you got to want it. Like, it's just still not easy. Like, you have to do some research and you have to make a few purchases, but it's possible. But if you ask around enough, and if you talk to enough people, you will find someone that loves hunting. And if you find someone that loves hunting, that person probably also loves introducing others to the outdoors. So don't be afraid to have those conversations. Like, even like walking around a Bass Pro or a Cabela's, I'm sure, just visiting with people there, you just never know what kind of access you might get.
Yeah. Well, so how would you describe the turkey season so far this year from your experience? Has it been a good one?
Yeah, we had the primary turkey biologist from the Department of Conservation on our show about a month or so ago, and we've had a couple good springs in terms of decent temperatures, not super wet, and so that's really allowed for great production and low mortality. So it's been like I heard 3 birds gobbling this morning on a property where I had never really heard birds before. And so in general, things look to be pretty good for the wild turkey. Now, there's still longer term considerations, like the proliferation of nest predators, coyotes, skunks, possums, things that the people don't trap anymore. But on the whole, things are looking pretty good this year for turkey hunting.
Well, that's good.
One last question for you, Tim, before we let you go. Your favorite turkey call is what style?
There's nothing that beats a mouth call, just for the sheer amount of versatility. But the mouth call is one of those things where, and me included, I get to be around some championship callers, and it kind of makes you self-conscious of your ability to mouth call. But I mouth yelped that gobbler in this morning, and it was good enough for him, so it's good enough for me. But mouth call is really the most versatile. And like if you're bow hunting or even shotgun hunting, it allows you to be hands-free. Otherwise, if you're running a slate or a box call, you got both hands that you're using, and it's hard to put it down, pick up the gun, because that's a lot of movement. Yeah. And turkeys pick up on movement.
Yeah, Tim, what does that mouth yelp sound like?
If I had it available, I could try it. But a lot of times, audio, like phones, will clip the audio
because
the frequency
true.
Is so high.
All right, I had to ask because I hear bow gobbling all the time, but I didn't know if you had one you could do for us or not. All right.
That's when someone brings in free donuts.
Exactly. I was going to say, at the Golden Corral, you're going to hear me gobbling.
Tim Chelsvik, we appreciate your time, my friend. Where can people find your video cast there? Is it on YouTube?
Yeah, YouTube or the DeerCast app. Okay. You can find us either place.
Outstanding. Tim Chelsvik, we appreciate you. Thank you.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right, that is it for Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. For all you beginners, maybe you just start with how to call in a turkey. That's the way to do it. Have a great rest of your weekend. We'll see you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.